Leviticus 17. You know, the text this morning, the area that we are covering according to the quarterly, speaks a lot and in depth on things that we can lay a general application to. But it does go into detail, particularly on the issue of adultery. Why do you think that God spent so much time in Leviticus drawing it down to a level that he did? I mean, if you looked at it, you saw that. I mean, it was very specific. Why? Don't know. It's such a personal issue, isn't it? What's that? Make sure we understood. And understand that a lot of what he's talking about today, particularly, is separating his people from all of those around them. You know, the people that were the nations and the villages, the kings, all those people around them had particular ways in which they worshiped their idols and served their idols. And so the in-depth study or explanations here are to clarify that, you know, sex, intimacy, belongs in a marriage between a man and a woman, and that couple for life. That is God's way. And so he makes sure that we understand, you know, and we look at what's going on in our world today. And somebody was telling a story the other day about the pastor running off with the deacon's wife or something. Or no, the deacon ran off with the pastor's wife. That's how the story went. And we don't want to mess up with the pastor. But he was telling a story of, you know, I was hearing a story about that the other day. And we hear that from time to time. And if we can draw a line and, you know, and put up a wall so that we understand that sex has a biblical, a holy place, a God-honoring place, but only between a man and his wife, we can solve a lot of problems. And we can be friends and we can love each other without ever stepping across that line. Guys, there's no excuse. We ought to be able to embrace each other. And, you know, in those days, the men kissed each other as a greeting, right? We're not into that, are we? but we don't do that. And so we can draw that line, that distinction, and say that this is a good thing in its place. It's not a bad thing in its place. But anywhere else is wrong. And we can draw that line and not have problems at work and not have problems in churches and not have problems in neighborhoods and not have problems in families. A lot of the explanation here was the intermingling with family members. And that's a problem. And we're talking about one partner, period. And that's what and he just got into it so deep here, because in the other religions, there were sexual components to their worship. And even when we go further, you know, closer to where we are in history, it was part of their, again, false worship to just have these orgies and such as that. So, and I know that's not something we want to talk about in church, but we're in Leviticus, okay? So we talk about it and understand something, that there's not a thing in the world wrong with an intimate marriage. In fact, it's one way that we can assure the intimacy and the honesty and the transparency in a marriage. It's the one thing that makes a relationship between a man and his wife different from all of his other relationships. Do you agree? We can be partners in business with other people. We can buy land and houses with other people. We can eat dinner with other people. That's that one thing that sets us, that relationship, apart from every other relationship. And here, all those other nations around, they inserted it into their religion, And God said, hold on a second. I don't want my people doing that. My people need to understand this is a holy activity between a man and his wife. So, and let me take another step back and say this. People get the idea, and in fact, I had someone say this to me this week. Well, we're already married in God's eyes. No, you're fornicating in God's eyes. That's what you're doing. And you don't have a commitment to each other. And therefore, since you don't have the commitment, since you're not bound by agreement, then you are not married. And we need to clarify that in our modern ideas. All right. Leviticus 17. He says, the life of the flesh is in the blood. I have given it to you upon the altar to make atonement for your souls. It is the blood that maketh atonement for the soul. How are you saved? If you're saved, you're saved the same way. Everybody's saved the same way. And that's through the blood. And Jesus, if he had not gone to the cross and been crucified, we would be lost. But because his blood was shed, this is Old Testament, this is animal sacrifice, but that always pointed toward the ultimate sacrifice of Jesus Christ. And so we know it's by the blood. And so the forgiveness of sins by the blood, the atonement by the blood. Chapter 18, verse number 6. None of you shall approach to any that is near kin to him to uncover their nakedness. I am the Lord. So again, and we're not going to go into all the details, but the pornography of today, the fornicating mind, God says, stop it, stop it. And he goes into great explanation there. Verse 22, thou shalt not lie with mankind as with womankind. It is an abomination. And so there's no question how God stands on that. Again, it is between a man and his wife, just as it was in the garden. Chapter 19, verse 2. Speak unto all the congregation of the children of Israel and say unto them, ye shall be holy, for I, the Lord your God, am holy. So what is our purpose? What is our goal? What is our mission? Why did you come to church today? Okay, to spread the word, what'd you say? To please the Lord? To worship the Lord? To be more like him, to grow closer to him, to understand him better. To understand him better. That's his word. You know, we have God's word so that we can understand the mind and heart of God. And we study it, and especially if we have a teacher, a pastor that can explain it in a simple way, right? Put it on the bottom shelf where we can reach it, then that's going to help us. And also, when we are studying independently, individually, sometimes we misunderstand or misread something, and we come to church, and it's taught in a way we can understand it, and we go, oh, I never understood that. And I hear that all the time. I never understood it that way. I heard somebody say the other day, they read John 17 and said, I've never understood John 17 the same way until now. And, you know, I don't know what it was that was different about what they understood, but when we dig into it, when we study it, sometimes we learn and we outgrow those misunderstandings or sometimes things we were taught before that weren't right. How many of us have been taught things that weren't right? And we had to outgrow it. We had to relearn it. So he says we need to be holy. And that's where we're gathered together. We're reading the Bible. We're studying because we want to grow to be more like him. Verse 3, ye shall fear every man his mother and his father and keep my Sabbaths. I am the Lord your God. So there's that regard for our parents. And children need to learn this at an early age, don't they? And you try to get them, you know, and there's nothing I've learned more plainly than that in the last couple of years. That when you get them beyond those formative years, I'm talking about between birth and 5 years old. By the time a child is 5 years old, their personality is set. Doesn't mean you can't make some adjustments, but their personality is set. That means if they've been through trauma, they've been exposed to that kind of stuff in their early childhood development, you're going to have problems. And you're going to have struggles with them, you know, ongoing. And as good as we can be and as much as we can provide for them, there's always going to be those early years that we missed. And so we got to start early. And, you know, it's not something that we want, that we brag about, but Sam has up to this point been very obedient, at least when it comes to me. But he's in that two-year-old phase. And so this week he learned what a belt was. He didn't like that. Now, you know, isn't that terrible, mean old preacher? But I'm going to tell you something. He understood it after the first time, what it was. And I hit him on his diaper. He barely even knew it was there. But he knew it was there. And the next time I pulled it out, he sat down. Okay? Guys, honestly, and I know people don't like that. And look, I'm the one raising them. And I'm the one that's got to be home every day with them. And so if you don't like it, I'm not giving them to you. He's too precious. But you raise yours the way you want to. But mine are going to get disciplined from an early age, an early stage. Not a beating. I don't agree with beatings. That's awful. But discipline. And they need to understand early. And if they understand to fear mom and dad, I mean a healthy fear. I don't mean terrorized by them. But a healthy fear, a respect for authority. It begins in the home. If they don't respect mom and dad, they're not going to respect the teacher. And if they don't respect the teacher, they're not going to respect the principal. How many of y'all ever went to the principal's office? I could probably draw you a diagram right now of my principal's office. But you understand, but there was discipline. There was discipline in the home. There was discipline in the school. And then if you ever got those blue lights and those cuffs, you understood. There was respect. I know people that will argue with a deputy or a patrolman on the side of the road. Don't do that. That's what court is for. And you build your case and you go talk to the judge and you respect the judge too. But we're growing up where there's no respect in the home, no respect in the school, no respect in the community, no respect in the courtroom. Why? Because we've taken God's way out. That's a problem. And you say, can we ever recover? We can do something with the ones that are coming up. But the problem is that period of time is lost. Right. Well, and you know, my kids will come sit in my lap and love on me. They love dad. And, you know, the big ones don't anymore. Corey tries her once in a while, but, you know, but they love their dad. There's a respect and an honor, but that has to be built in. And I love my children. They know I love them. And I'll defend them and I'll help them and support them, but they know they better respect dad. And they know I don't tolerate it. And so I will say, you know, not only for that, and my dad, I knew the same thing. I don't know about y'all, but when I was a kid, I died once from discipline. Right. Okay, y'all know that's not real. But I knew better. Let me say this, and my mom's probably watching, my brother maybe, probably not, but my older brother backtalked my mom one time, and he caught a hand across the face. I've never seen that happen in my house when I was growing up, never, one time. I never did. That was enough for me. Guys, it's one time I can learn a lesson from somebody else's mistakes. But we've got to show them love. We've got to pour into their lives. We've got to look forward in their future and pray for them every day. But they have to understand, dad, mom, they're in charge. They're the authorities. And, you know, as far as friends go, there is a defined relationship there. I want them to be friendly. I want them to love me. But they know what no means. They must know what no means. Because if they don't understand no when they're little, the older they get, the harder it's going to be for them to deal with the word no, and it's going to cause more problems. So anyway. And he also said, keep my Sabbaths. What are Sabbaths for? Rest and worship. Rest and we're to honor God. It is basically a reset. We need to have a reset. We need to take a day off and let our body reset. We need to worship God and spend time in prayer and Bible study and meditation and reset, recalibrate ourselves with God. It's so important. Because what happens if we don't honor that Sabbath? And that's once a week, right? What happens if we don't recalibrate? What happens if we don't reset ourselves and get back to God? We get further and drift further away. We've got to be anchored to God. And that once a week reminder, that once a week solace, quiet time with God, prayer. And I'm not, look, we pray every day. We study every day. We worship God every day. But that one day, he said, that's my day. And I want you to put everything else aside and spend it with me. And that's precious. That's wonderful. Verse number 4, turn not unto idols, nor make to yourselves molten gods. I am the Lord your God. Again, and I talk about this from time to time, those Hindus that came and visited one time, and they were just shocked that we don't have a cross in this room. Again, I'm not against crosses. Don't want to have to re-explain all that again. But we don't have statues. We don't worship images. Nobody. Not the apostles. We don't have a statue of Jesus, because I tell you, I don't know what he looks like, do you? So how are we going to have a picture or a statue of Jesus that we worship? Don't worship a statue. Worship God. Pray to God, not a statue. God is spirit, and they that worship him must worship him in spirit and in truth. We don't need tangible. We need to worship him in spirit. Again, we're still looking at this idea of all the other false religions around them, and God is separating them from what the other people do. He wants there to be a difference between them and everyone else. Verse 5, if you offer a sacrifice of peace offerings to the Lord, you shall offer it at your own will. I don't want anybody to feel like we're demanding that they give to the church, give to God through the church. That is, I don't want anybody to feel that way. We don't talk about money much around here. God's been good to us. God's been good to all of us and been good to the church in turn through our offerings. But don't ever feel like, well, you know, that preacher's begging for money. We don't like that. We don't like that around here, do we? And I'm not going to press. Just let God handle it. Let me tell you something. Let me back up. When the pandemic started, so 2 years ago, and it was obvious that things were going to change around here for a little while, and someone said to me, we need to reach out to the church members and remind them that the church still has financial needs. And nobody got a notice like that, did you? No. I said, we're going to trust God on this. And we had the best financial year we ever had, ever in the history of the church. I'm not about to get out there and tell people we need your money. Not going to do it. We know what God's doing here, and God's been so good to us. But I'm not going to be scared of anything. It needs to be your own will. When we give, it needs to be from the heart. We see God's favor in that. Verse 9. When you reap the harvest of your land, thou shalt not wholly reap the corners of thy field, neither shalt thou gather the gleanings of thy harvest. Thou shalt not glean thy vineyard, neither shalt thou gather every grape of the vineyard. Thou shalt leave them for the poor and the stranger. I am the Lord your God. Look, he says, leave a little bit behind. Leave something for others. Guys, when we, in our own personal budgets, we have everything hopefully budgeted out, you know, power bill, all that kind of stuff, our tithes, all that in there. But we need to leave a little bit, maybe keep a little bit in our pocket for the needy. If you have a field, that's different. You want to put up a sign that says, come glean. I know farmers that do that, especially in South Florida. There's days of the week where they say, okay, anybody that wants to could come in here and harvest. By the way, we've got all kind of squash back there and apples and everything else. Make sure you take some of the harvest when you go. but to leave something behind for those less fortunate, you know, hopefully we have a desire to give to the poor. And however we do that, the less fortunate, let's make sure that we don't take that out of our own personal giving. Verse 11, you shall not steal, neither deal falsely, neither lie to one another, Ye shall not swear by my name falsely, neither shalt thou profane the name of thy God. I am the Lord. So we have integrity in our marriage. We have integrity in our giving. We have integrity in our respect for our mothers and fathers, and vice versa for our children. Respect for God, rest and reset. And then he says, and have integrity in your dealings. Don't steal. Don't take. And you know, we need to learn. Let me see how I should say this. We need to become detached from money and material and stop letting stuff mean so much to us. There's been times, I'm sure, we could sit around and everybody could give testimony of a time somebody took advantage of them. But you know what? Let it go. Just let it be. I've said this. One of the quickest ways to lose a friend is loan them money. And there's been some people I've loaned money to, and thank God I loaned it to them because I never heard from them again. It's the quickest way to get rid of some people. Now, if somebody comes up and tries to loan me money after church, I'll know what you're up to, all right? Verse 30, thou shalt not defraud thy neighbor, neither rob him. The wages of him that is hired shall not abide with thee all night till the morning. And so, you know, we pay. Don't ever leave it on the table. You take care of your dealings, of your business. Verse 14, thou shalt not curse the deaf, nor put a stumbling block before the blind, but shalt fear thy God. I am the Lord. So, I mean, there are things in there, like that last verse. I mean, would we really need that in the Bible? We really need to be told that? You realize just how detailed that is with God to tell us something like that? Yeah, because people sometimes think it's funny. Sometimes people think it's not going to hurt anything. God said, don't do it. Verse 15, ye shall do no unrighteousness in judgment. Thou shalt not respect the person of the poor, nor honor the person of the mighty, but in righteousness thou shalt judge thy neighbor. You understand what he's saying there in verse 15? He says, if it's wrong, it's wrong. If they're guilty, they're guilty. Don't say, well, you know, they had a tough life and they were disadvantaged. No, he says they're either right or they're wrong. Well, you know, his family gives a lot of money to our campaign. No. It's either right or it's wrong. Judge fairly. Judge righteously. And it's completely out of whack. And, you know, we're in trouble in our society today because people just won't follow the book. Verse 16, thou shalt not go up and down as a talebearer among the people. That's a big one, isn't it? Talebearer, gossip. Neither shalt thou stand against the blood of thy neighbor. I am the Lord. Thou shalt not hate thy brother in thy heart. Thou shalt in any wise rebuke thy neighbor and not suffer sin upon him. So, you know, settle up. Guys, one of the worst things we could do is hold a grudge. Who does that normally destroy? Now, I've told this story before. I'm going to tell it again. A lady came to me and she said, Brother Derek, I need to apologize to you. And I said, okay, for what? She said, I've held a grudge against you. I've been mad at you for X number, I don't remember, 7 or 8 years, something like that. I said, well, for what? Well, you did this, and it was at church camp. She's not a member of this church. She's Central Florida. And she said, and you made this judgment, and I didn't agree with you, and I've been mad at you ever since. Now, I didn't even know she was mad. So who did it hurt? Didn't hurt me. I didn't even know she was mad. So if we have a disagreement, and I think we talked about this Wednesday night, you know, communication, miscommunication destroys a lot of relationships. A lack of communication. Misunderstandings. So just talk about it. If you didn't like it, say so. If you didn't agree with it, say so. By the way, that doesn't mean I'm going to change or you're going to change. But we should be able to disagree and still be agreeable, still love each other. How many of y'all agree with your wife all the time? Or your husband all the time? Raise your hand, Stan. There you go. Hey, we don't even agree with ourselves all the time. So if you get mad at me because we disagree on something, understand something. We need to deal with it. We need to talk about it. But don't just be mad. And that's the same goes for your neighbor. Same goes with your wife or your husband. Verse 18, thou shalt not avenge nor bear any grudge against the children of thy people. So that means everybody. And love thy neighbor as thyself. Again, he says, I am the Lord. He's laying it down. I'm the Lord. You understand? You understand how wise this is? God says it's coming from God. I am the Lord. And I'm telling you, this is what's right. This is what's best. Somebody was talking the other day, and I said, why is God against that? Why does God oppose that? What's the answer? Doesn't matter what it is. It always comes back to the same thing. Because it's hurting us. That's why God's against it. A dog comes to attack your child. It doesn't matter if you knew that dog, hated that dog, or loved that dog. When it starts to attack your child, you're going to get on that dog, aren't you? Same thing with sin. God says, I'm against it because it's against you. It's killing you. It's poison. Verse 28, ye shall not make any cuttings in your flesh for the dead, nor print any marks upon you. I am the Lord. Ye shall keep my Sabbaths, reverence my sanctuary. I am the Lord. Verse 31, regard not them that have familiar spirits, neither seek after wizards to be defiled by them. I am the Lord your God. It's real plain, isn't it? Look at verse 32, and I'm going to let you explain this to me. Thou shalt rise up before the hoary head. Explain that to me. You pay respect to old people. I read something, and I don't know where I read it, but it really changed the way I look at things. And I'll be sitting back there on that back pew with all you guys, right? If somebody walks in, I'll stand up and shake their hand. I'm not, why? Well, because I'm usually the youngest one, right? But I stand up and shake your hand. Why do I do that? That's what he said right here. He says, stand up. Pay respect to your seniors. What are y'all laughing about back there? Because my knees still work, right? But it doesn't matter where I am. When I'm going to shake somebody's hand, unless, you know, there's some extenuating circumstance, I am going to rise to shake their hand. And I believe that's a good thing for us to teach our young people. Stand up. The Bible says you rise up before the hoary head, the old man. Right? You don't just sit there. You rise up. So, just a good thing to put in your pocket and save for later. Honor the face of the old man. That's important. We've lost that, haven't we? The disregard, disrespect, and dismiss. In the book of Exodus, when they got to Kadesh Barnea, they betrayed God, and God said everybody above the age of 20 is going to die in the wilderness. They wandered for 40 years. But you know why God didn't kill them right then? Because those people, though they betrayed God at that moment, they had wisdom and experience that those children and those young people needed. And we need to learn from those who have been down that road. We need to learn from those who have gone before us. And sometimes new is better. I have a belief when it comes to certain trades that the one who just graduated from school probably knows the most up-to-date information more than all those who've already been in the business for a while. Don't you think so? The newest techniques, the newest equipment, the newest ideas. But don't take away from the old guy that's on the job and been there for 20 years. Because he might have some tricks that the school doesn't know. And it's always been funny to me how you send a kid to academy and they teach out of the book so you can pass a test, but about every day they say, but now don't do what says in the book. Right? This is the way we do it in the field. This is the way it actually works. Verse number 33. If a stranger sojourn with thee in your land, ye shall not vex him, but the stranger that dwelleth with you shall be unto you as one born among you. Thou shalt love him as thyself. Ye were strangers in the land of Egypt. I am the Lord your God. So he says, don't, you know, we need to be very careful about our ethnic cliques, where we won't have anything to do with anybody who's not like us. Particularly here, he's talking to the land of Israel. He's talking about the stranger sojourning with his people. But the principle is the same. We need to treat everybody with respect. He says, as one of your own sons. Verse 35. You shall do no unrighteousness in judgment, in meat, yard, and weight, or in measure. Just balances, just weights, just ephah, just hin shall you have. I am the Lord your God, which brought you out of the land of Egypt. So he says, be fair. Be fair in your weights. Don't try to cheat somebody. I don't know. Seems to me like most time people trying to cheat, at least what I see, is over measuring their fish. Y'all ever see that? This big. Better turn them to the book of Leviticus and show them what God said about that, right? In chapter 20, and I've got almost every verse marked in here. Again, we come back to the adultery and the fornication, and particularly in relationships. But look at verse number 6. The soul that turneth after such as have familiar spirits after wizards and go whoring after them, I will even set my face against that soul and cut him off from among his people. So he's still talking about the religions that are around them. And, you know, I tune in to different preaching, whether it's on the radio or on the internet. And, you know, I see things on the internet that other churches are doing. And I think, man, that looks like it would work. But you know what, guys? What we're doing works. Right in the Bible, right in the hymnal, still with the piano. I mean, we're still doing it the old way. I'm not saying that's the only way to do it, but it works. And if it works, why look for some other way to do it? We don't have to be like everybody else. And that's the problem when we start trying to be like everybody else, whether it's as a church or whether it's as a family or as an individual, trying to be like everyone. Well, look at what they're doing. Okay, but does what you're doing work? Nothing wrong with taking best practices. I believe in best practices. But I don't believe in doing something just because everybody else is doing it. And that's what God's cautioning them against here. You start drawing in different things from other religions, and man, it causes trouble and confusion. I just take it that you already studied chapter 20, and so we'll leave that out. It gets pretty detailed in there. Verse 22 of chapter 20. Ye shall therefore keep all my statutes, all my judgments, and do them, that the land whither I bring you to dwell therein, spew you not out. He says, if you act out, you won't be where I've planted you. Think about that. Think about that. Where we are now. I hope that where you are now is right in the perfect will of God. That you have followed God's prescription to get where you are, and that if you keep following God's plan, you'll get where he wants you to be. But understand something. He's blessing you now. You're in God's favor. You're in God's will. But if we start acting out and backsliding, God says, I'll remove you. Because I put you in a place of blessing. I put you in a place where I can use you. But if you start acting out, I will throw you out of here. And that's something we need to be mindful of. How many of you say you have a good life right now? Amen. Look around the world. We've got a good life. It doesn't come without struggle. We all have challenges. There's always things that we wish were better. But God has blessed us. God's been good to us. Verse 23, ye shall not walk in the manners of the nation which I cast out before you. For they committed all these things, I therefore abhorred them. So he's giving them this land, and he says, don't start picking up, you know, as they're cleaning stuff out of the houses they take over, they might find an idol. Oh, well, that's okay. Let's put it up on the mantle. God says, get that thing out of here. Get that thing out of here. You start doing stuff like that, I'll throw you out like I threw them out. I'll give it to someone else. Verse 24, I have said unto you, ye shall inherit their land. I will give it unto you to possess it, a land that floweth with milk and honey. I am the Lord your God, which have separated you from other people. What is the significance of separation? I'm done. What is the significance of separation? To be different? Why? Okay, so we are different, and the answer is so the world can see a difference. I remember a long time ago, someone came to me and she said, you grieve differently. You accept things, you accept disappointment and challenges differently. What was the difference? Jesus is the difference. Guys, grieving is normal. Grieving is natural. Grieving is biblical. Jesus wept. And when it says he wept, I mean, it doesn't say, you know, a little tear came down. He wept. Grieving isn't, but we know if someone, let me say it this way. If a friend of mine died and I didn't know if they were saved, it would devastate me. It would break my heart. And so it might be a different kind of grieving over if I'm weeping for someone or grieving for someone who I know is in heaven. But I saw a picture of Brother Gene Coxwell of his birthday would be. But he's in heaven. He's in heaven. Man, the moment he got there, you know, he was better. Yeah, better off than all of us. Guys, they're set free from this body of death. And so there ought to be a difference in our grieving. There ought to be a difference in our celebration. There ought to be a difference in our goals, a difference in the way we treat people. Separation is significant because the world needs to see Jesus in us. Significant, right? And she was telling me last week it was 16 years since she got saved. Amen. But there ought to be a difference. There ought to be a difference in everything like us. Now, Jesus said that we're supposed to be wise as serpents and harmless as doves. And serpents, I don't know if you've ever seen one in the wild, but they blend in pretty well, don't they? So most of the time, the world will just see us, just another man, just another woman. But it's in those moments that they see a difference. They say something's different. All right, let's take a break.